Sea of Red, it's time for another Fireside Chat, the official podcast of Flames fans. It's go time.
Well, I'm Dan alongside Matt, and we're back to talk more Flames hockey. But before we do, we just want to start the show off with a note for Flames fans. Former Flame Chris Simon, who was with the team during their 04 run, sadly passed away at age 52 this week. Chris Simon, a big part of that run, played 85 regular season games and just over 22 playoff games for the Flames between 03 and 06. He didn't play the 04-05 season when there was a lockout. Matt, it really sucks to see a guy like this going so early.
Yeah, and it's difficult when, you know, a player has personal issues that led to his passing, and it's an unfortunate situation all the way around.
I remember Chris Simon when they brought him in. I was excited because he was really, I mean, as much as that cast of Flames players in that 03-04 season was really a bunch of nobodies, you could argue that he was probably one of the biggest names in that team. Like, he'd been around the league for a while. Everyone knew his name. Do you remember what the Flames gave up to get him?
I know Noodles was a part of that, but the draft picks and other things, not quite so much.
All right, on March 6th, 2004, so almost pretty much, you know, 20 years to the day, almost, the Calgary Flames give up Blair Betts, Jamie McLennan, and Greg Moore for Chris Simon and a 04 seventh rounder that ended up being some guy named Matt Schneider.
Yeah, so
I could see any one of those guys for Simon in the seventh being a reasonable package, but like Blair Betts, Noodles, and I don't know who Greg Moore is, but those two guys together seems like the Flames overpaid.
Well, Blair Betts was nothing more than like a 13th forward anyway, so.
But you could argue, I mean, that's where Simon was for most games as well, right?
Yeah, and, you know, realistically, Lynn Loines and him and Betts were that kind of filler depth guy heading into the trade deadline. So the Flames just needed to upgrade the last line on that team. And, you know, getting rid of your third string goalie and, you know, a player that's not going to be in your lineup for Simon was an excellent move. And he scored the first goal for the Flames in the Stanley Cup Finals in Calgary. So he had definitely had an impact throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, still a fan favorite to this day, right? When you look back at that team and you think about the guys on that team, still one of the favorites. And a lot of people forget there, but he was one of two enforcers. Most teams had one. The Flames had him and they had Oliwa, Christoph Oliwa, and the two of them together. You didn't see that kind of, I guess, firepower on one roster very often.
No, and, you know, you got to beat him on the score sheet and in the corner, too.
Yeah, and for those that don't know, Chris Simon went on to play all the way up till 2012-2013. He played for about six seasons in the KHL, even being a captain of a team over there, which is awesome. So his career kept going. Chris Simon will be missed by the Sea of Red.
Yeah, just lousy situation.
Yeah, but, and, you know, I mean, I don't want to talk too much about what happened or didn't happen or, you know, how Chris passed away. We'll let fans read about that on their own. But I think the more we see guys passing away young like this, I think the more that it makes me hope the league and the Players Association really do some hard thinking about CTE and how we're taking care of players when they retire and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's not just hockey. Like, soccer has the same issues. Rugby, football, you know, any game that has contact with the head at all, it's, you know, all of the leagues, like, especially as science learns more about how the brain works and operates, you know, things just have to be tweaked and changed as more information gets more commonly known. And, you know, because you don't want to see people continue to get problems like this moving forward.
Nope. Well, I was about to say let's move on to a happier topic, but not a happier topic, unfortunately. Looking back at the week that was for the Flames, they played only two games, which is unusual for the Flames, Monday and Saturday. There's another game that'll take place later today as we record on Sunday. Both of them big losses, a 5-2 loss to the Capitals and a 4-2 loss to Vancouver. So let's start with that Capitals game, Matt. Ovechkin scores twice. The Capitals defeat the Flames for their third straight win. Ovechkin didn't look great at the start of the season, but he's starting to pick it up.
Yeah, and he's been on a tear even since then. Like, he even scored two earlier today, 8 in his last 5 games, including today's games. And when Ovi's on a heater, those pucks find the net. And, you know, no matter how good Wolf is, when he's on, it does not matter.
Yeah, and Dustin Wolf played this one. Dan Vladar backing him up here. You know, I thought Wolf played well in this one, but I think this was a great adversity game for Wolf. I mean, when you're taking on Ovi or taking on Sid or taking on any of those guys that are in the top echelon, to see what your kid has got against them, I think that's really a good measuring stick for Dustin Wolf.
Yeah, and he needs to learn how to play against those kinds of teams as he takes his next steps into becoming a starting goaltender in the NHL. And he didn't play badly against the Capitals, even though he gave up 4 goals. There was not really much he could have done on any of the 4 goals. You know, the defense for the Flames at times was rather suspect in allowing too good of players too much time in wide open spaces.
Yeah, there's a couple of those. They just watch them go right for the net.
It's like, oh, that's my guy. Oh, okay. Well, sorry, dude. Bye. I'm going to the bench.
And the Flames had a couple days after that one to think about that game. Came back Saturday night, Hockey Night in Canada, against the Canucks in Vancouver. This was the first time that really we saw Lindholm and Kuzmenko against their former teams, and the Flames dropped another one, 4-2 against the Canucks. They got down early. They were down, what, like a minute into the game? And never really managed to fight back.
Yeah, I thought they played really well against Vancouver, and certainly a better effort than against the Capitals, and were pretty much in it throughout the contest. They just couldn't find that equalizing goal.
And there's a streak there in the third where they were getting a lot of good shots on.
Yeah, and if not for Casey DeSmith putting up a good performance, the Flames might have tied the game and send it to overtime, but power play goal late, and then an empty netter, and then the Flames responding with Joel Hanley's goal, all coming in like the last 6 minutes of the game, sealed the deal. And, you know, but the score definitely was not indicative of the game. It was a fairly even contest, which, considering Vancouver is the best team in the NHL, that's a fairly decent performance by the team.
Yeah, I thought they looked a lot sharper here than they did in the last couple, not just that Washington game. I've been happy, really. I mean, even though they beat Montreal, that wasn't a great game. I think the Vegas game, they looked really good. The Colorado game, they didn't. So I think that this is the way that we know the Flames can play when they're playing well.
Yeah, and you know, like, this is a team that's going to be a likely bottom 10 team. They're, even when they play well, when you're playing against good teams, you're likely coming out on the losing side of it. Yeah. And, you know, you just have to take solace in the fact that they actually hung with them through the first 55 minutes and, you know, made it an interesting game until it got away from them.
Jacob Markstrom's first game back after injury in this one. What'd you think of him in net?
Typical Markstrom performance. I didn't think he did anything particularly bad, and like, none of the goals were his fault.
I was kind of surprised. I expect him to kind of take a, you know, maybe a half step backwards coming back from an injury. I think the fact the Flames did so much time off this week, maybe that's what helped him.
Yeah, and realistically, you know, like, the first goal, like, 45 seconds into the game, being a perfect three-way passing play to the guy that's literally standing
right,
you know, like, wide open in front of the net. And he almost got a stick on it, too. So, you know, it's just one of those kind of games. And, you know, it is what it is.
That's probably the best way to look at it there, right? I mean, the Flames, I think, don't necessarily need the win in any of these games, but, you know, would have been nice just for the rivalry reasons.
And an interesting tidbit, Elias Lindholm becomes the first player in Canucks history to score against and for their team in the same season. Because the first game of the year, he scored against them, and then, last night he got the empty netter. So
There you
go. Just a weird little quirk of history. I don't know if the Flames have any players like that.
I don't know. We'll have to look it up.
Yeah.
Well, after those two games, the Flames now sit in number 5 in the wild card race. Obviously, the wild card spots held by Nashville with 88 points, Vegas with 83 points. St. Louis is right under them at 79, then Minnesota 77, then the Calgary Flames have 69 games played, 33 wins, 31 losses, 5 overtime losses for a total of 71 points, and Seattle at 69 right behind them. So tough slog to get in at this point.
Yeah, it's realistically, it's done. It's like, done. There's no getting, you know, leapfrogging 12 points in 13 games. Like, the Flames would be lucky to get 12 points in 13 games, let alone, you know, making up ground on Vegas. Like,
you know, St. Louis
might make it instead of Vegas because they're making a real push, but. Yeah, time's getting short for everybody.
I think that there would be some big changes happening in Vegas if they don't make the playoffs.
I agree.
You know, and I'm hearing a lot of fans now, as I think we all know the Flames are out, who are saying, you know, maybe the Flames should start losing or start tanking, and I hate that word and that mentality. Have you seen what the PWHL, the Women's League, is doing with their sort of standings once you're out of the playoffs?
If I recall correctly, the draft pick is... based on the amount of points you accumulate after you've been eliminated.
Exactly, yeah. So it gives you that incentive that once you're eliminated to keep playing hard because the first pick goes to the team that accumulates the most points after they're eliminated. And, you know, it's new, it's radical, it's different. I don't know if it would work in the NHL, but I like the sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's going to be some bad teams that are always going to be bad in that case when you have a league of 32 like the NHL.
Yeah, like, you're going to have the San Jose Sharks and the Chicago Blackhawks and the Anaheim Ducks that are just, you know, like, they've each got, like, one decent player.
But, you know, those teams then might go deadline shopping, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and you could easily start seeing, like, teams throw, like, a seventh-round pick at, you know, insert miscellaneous fourth-line forward here on an expiring just to...
I think in that case, you're going to see a lot less big deals done at the deadline because everybody's going to try and keep what they have or upgrade what they have.
Yeah.
But it's a neat idea, and I was kind of thinking about that today as I was thinking about the Flames. And, you know, now that they're... I mean, they're not mathematically out, but realistically they're out. You know, it would be kind of interesting to give them that pick to play for.
Yeah. And, well, the Flames, realistically, like, they're not going to fall into the bottom seven.
No.
Like, Columbus, Montreal, Ottawa, and Arizona are all a tier below the Flames. But Seattle, Pittsburgh, and Buffalo, who are the three teams immediately behind us, are all within 2 points. And it's fairly likely that the Flames, as, you know, like, none of those teams lost their entire defense corps, basically. So, you know, like, the Flames will probably end up falling down past those three teams at the minimum just by playing the games. So it's not going to be outright tanking. Nope. It's just the talent level is just not there.
It's very true. And, thankfully, you know, talking to talent, Markstrom back, which is good to see, but the Flames lose Dan Vladar for the rest of the season due to a hip surgery. That's a nasty surgery. That's a tough one, especially for goalies. I was looking back at some old clips, and maybe you could tell Vladar was having some hip issues, but I guess my question to you, Matt, is, well, I have a couple. So first off, with Vladar out, Wolf is up right now. Do you think that we see Wolf in the NHL for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I don't see, unless Wolf himself gets hurt, he's here for the rest of the year.
I heard somebody on I think it was on the Reddit or something for the Flames, who was saying they should send Wolf down, play Markstrom, and at that point just go with one of the backups like...
Dansk.
And I'm like, well, yeah, but...
You could, but at this point, realistically, Wolf is available and eligible for the playoffs if the Wranglers get there.
Yep.
And so he's going to be down there at the end of the year anyway. Mm-hmm. So,
well, and I guess the only thing is, and I think the thought there was if they get there, and that might help them solidify their spot.
Yes, and I think for his development as a player, that it's better for him to be getting NHL minutes.
I totally agree with you.
Because he's pretty much done with the AHL anyway, and he would just be there for the playoff run if they do qualify.
You and I talked last week about how we would split up the three goaltenders' workload. Now that you're down to Markstrom and Wolf, which, I'll be honest, I think was probably going to, in a lot of people's mind, be the pairing next year anyways. How do you split up the workload between these two?
50-50. I think six games each and, you know, just alternate, basically. I don't see any need to play Markstrom a ton.
You're not gaining anything by playing Markstrom.
Yeah,
like we talked about last week, you could actually do yourself harm if he were to get hurt and you're trying to flip him.
Yeah, that's why I'm figuring some games because, you know, just to show that, hey, he's actually healthy. But, you know, they need to also get Wolf in as many games as possible.
Yeah, I think I would probably play Wolf. I think 50-50 sounds good, but I think at the same time, if Wolf's getting hot, I would leave Wolf in.
I agree.
Like, you know, and you might even do a win till you lose scenario at this point, or play till you lose scenario at this point.
Yeah, which I can see as well. Wouldn't be opposed to either, you know, and it's one of those where, yeah.
at least maybe play till you lose for Wolf.
Yeah.
And then try to alternate again. Like, you know, because you could have Markstrom win four or five in a row. He doesn't really need that, but maybe it's, okay, Wolf, we'll put you in. If you win it, we'll put you in again. Put you in, okay, now Markstrom goes in, solidifies things, then we'll put you in again the next game.
Yeah, and realistically, of the current players in the organization, Dustin Wolf is the most important player to succeed and doing what's right for him moving forward. Like there are some players that like we haven't drafted yet or acquired yet that will also be very important to moving this team into the next generation of players. But, you know, for what's currently on the team, like he is a vital component of this team and their success moving forward. So doing what's best for him, in my mind, is priority number 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, right now playing Markstrom is not going to help the team at all. You're not gaining anything from doing that, and you're gaining a lot from playing Wolf. So, you know, while Markstrom pride-wise might say I'm the starter I want to go, I think if you're going to play one guy more than the other, it's got to be Wolf.
I agree.
You know, I think 50-50 is the least you can play Wolf going forward from here.
Yeah, and it, realistically, like, it makes no sense to, like, especially like tonight, with the being a back-to-back, for sure, Wolf should be in there and, you know, play it by ear at that point.
I see Wolf in tonight against the Sabres. I would play Wolf against Chicago.
Yeah,
I'd
keep it up.
Yeah, I'd probably play Markstrom against the Blues because that could have point implications maybe. I'd probably play... I mean, it depends. You've got a lot of bottom teams here. And in April, the Flames are going on their road trip to California. Like, I could see Wolf playing, you know, two of the three there, especially when it's the Sharks and the Ducks.
Yeah.
So I think you've got to give Wolf at least 50% of the games. And like you said, he's an important piece to know whether he can do this or not. And we've seen him for a couple games, but I think also just getting him some regular work at the NHL level. We've seen a lot of goalies who come up, look good for two or three games here and there, but can't, you know, do the regular work.
Yeah, exactly. And he also needs to know, like, come training camp next year, what he needs to do to cement himself as an NHL goaltender. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more that he can do, the better he will be next year. And so the more lessons he can learn in each game is a teaching tool for him. Yeah, and
especially when I think especially when you've got Markstrom sitting on the bench, I think it takes something. I mean, I'm not an NHL goaltender, obviously, but I think there's something mental there to know if this goes wrong, Markey's right there.
Yeah.
If I have a bad night, that's okay. Markey can come bail us out.
Exactly, and realistically, you know, like, as much as it's painful to say, like, none of these games actually matter or worth a hill of beans. So it doesn't matter if, like, the Flames lose every game 9-0. you know, like, ideally you do not want to see that, but, you know, like, there's...
It's going to make the next couple of weeks very rough for us, Matt.
Yeah. So, how about them demon?
Demon? Where?
But, you know what I mean, like, it does not matter in terms of the actual results of the game, and...
And that's why I think you've got to give, and I think maybe even some of the challenging games. Don't just give Wolf the easy games. Give him, you know, one of the hard teams and, you know, maybe one of the teams like Winnipeg in a playoff race and see how he does against a good NHL team.
Yeah, and, you know, and it's also a very important thing for all the young defensemen that have been acquired as well to, you know, give them opportunities to try and take that next step so they can learn for next year as well. Because, you know, as much as there are options available in the off season, likely the Flames are going to be running some combination of those young defensemen next year. So, you know, like, they need to also learn how to play, like, top 4 minutes, top six minutes.
And I think also learning, like, every goalie is a little bit different. I think there's something to be said about learning how to play in front of your goaltender.
Exactly. And, like, we've seen, like, when new players are added, like Mackenzie Weegar last year, he struggled for the first 2 months of the season, and then he was good after that, and he's been great this year. And, you know, Dougie Hamilton, when we got him, it was the same thing. And, you know, like, TJ Brody, when he first came up to the Flames, was a complete tire fire for the first few months. Then he got used to playing our system and was fine. And it's one of those where, you know, when you basically have replaced 2/3 of your defense corps plus your spare defensemen with new people, like, everybody's learning on the fly, and, you know, it's not surprising that everybody's struggling, but, you know, the more lessons that for them that can be learned so that way they can start off next year playing effectively will do a lot of benefit for them developmentally and for the team next season.
Well, going back to the goaltenders, do you think now that this makes Dan Vladar untradeable in the offseason? Like, if I'm a GM and there's a guy who's coming off a hip surgery, a big thing for a goaltender who you don't know how he's going to fare. You haven't seen him play. I'm not going to want to acquire that guy.
No, and realistically, Vladar, by and large, is not movable. Like, we saw when Kari Ramo got hurt at the end of his Flames career, that, like, nobody signed him the following season, even though he was a respectably decent NHL quality goaltender, and he had to end up going to Europe. And the Flames do have him under contract, so you will see him on the team next year for some stretch of time. But, like, unless you're paying somebody to take him, like, here's a second or a third round draft pick to just, you know, move the $2 million, which makes zero logistical sense anyway, like, Vladar will be a part of the opening day lineup next year, and that's fine. And, you know, like, it doesn't really impact the Flames choices either, frankly, because one way or another, like, they're going to have to have a good opportunity to move Markstrom regardless of what Vladar's situation is. And, you know, then you have free agency to add a veteran guy like a James Reimer type, you know, filler guy as an insurance in case Vladar can't go or is struggling to that extent.
What do you think the Flames are going to have cap room. What do you think the chance is that Dan Vladar plays more games next year with the Wranglers than the Flames?
About 50-50.
I could see him start on the Wranglers because they don't know what they've got there. I mean, I think he'll clear waivers no problem because nobody wants to touch the hip injury.
Yeah, especially with it. Again, that depends on how his training camp goes, and that's why he had the surgery early so he could be good for the start of training camp.
And yeah, even with that money, I don't know that anyone else is going to want to take him.
No, but it's one of those that, like, if he plays well in training camp, then he'll stay with the Flames. If he is giving up 7-8 goals in training camp like we've seen some goaltenders, then he'll probably get waived and sent to the minors. And
see, and I think the Flames almost have to plan without him next year, like, because you don't know what you're going to get. If they want, if let's just say that they do move on from Markstrom, then I think you need a plan for Wolf, and you've got to then find another backup. And, whether that's a UFA backup, whether you trade for that, whatever that is, I think you need some veteran guy there. You can't plan for Vladar Wolf. If Vladar's healthy, great. It gives you some options.
You basically need to go out and get your Kari Ramo or Jonas Hiller type of just filler backup 1B type guy.
I think you really need a 1B. You need a guy you can rely on because you don't know what Wolf's got.
No, and like that's where like a guy like Peter Mrazek or, insert one of, Vanacek or, Martin Jones or, I could list off like 15 guys that are in that tier of not good enough to be a starter on their own right, but, can definitely fill in. And, I think that's how they'll have to approach it and basically have Wolf Vladar battle with the new guy to, get the 1B spot with Wolf.
Yeah, and I mean, if they, if they do move on from Markstrom, I think it's going to make things a lot more difficult because you've got to fill that hole. But I don't think at the same time the Flames are going to be any more likely to keep Markstrom because Vladar's out.
No, and like, how would you say, it's also about respecting the player as well. And, Markstrom, when he signed here, like, the Flames were in contention mode. And, he's also 34, going to be 35 next year. He wants to win a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. So, like, the odds of him even wanting to stay here are near zero anyway. And then, you add all the drama from the trade deadline onto it, and it just, it's a bit of a mess. And I think regardless, Markstrom's not back next year.
Yeah, and we can debate that more in the offseason. I think, if you're the Flames, you look at both eventualities, but I don't think they're going to be more likely to keep him because Vladar's out. I think you and I both looked at Vladar as a good upcoming goalie, and we, maybe he needs the first half of the season in the American League or a whole season in the American League to get back to where he needs to be. If his
hits, and the thing is that with Vladar, he's shown flashes of being a good goaltender, mm-hmm. and good games where like he'll give up 4 or 5 goals, but he makes so many good saves. And it's like you begin to wonder, are some of the bad goals being caused because of the fact that his hip's bothering him to the point where, because, he's been in and out of the lineup all year.
That's what I was kind of getting at earlier. Yeah, you could kind of see when you watch some games in the last couple weeks, he maybe didn't look like he did a lot earlier.
Yeah.
And I don't know for sure it's a hit, but he just wasn't moving the same way.
Yeah, and it's one of those where, in much the same way with Wolf, you have to see what you have in Vladar, too. And, if he comes back and plays well, then you've got your goaltender for next year. And having an emergency fill-in guy regardless is a useful thing because of how frequent both goaltenders for the Flames have been hurt. So I think going with the three-headed monster approach regardless is a decent idea for next season.
Yeah, I think you would want to go into camp with Vladar, Wolf, somebody else, whether that's Markstrom or not. I think you need somebody else there because I don't think that's Dansk. I think they need to go out and get another. I think there's going to be a year when they need probably 2 veterans in the American League. So you find another guy, whether you sneak one of those guys through waivers. Let's say it is Markstrom and they bring in Mrazek. I mean, if you lose them on waivers, no big deal if you think you've got your pair. But there's also always a market for a backup. Like, somebody's always got a goalie hurt.
Yeah, and you look at, Carolina, they've had Kochetkov and Anderson and Ranta, and, Ranta's been hurt for part of the year, Anderson's been hurt for part of the year, and Kochetkov's just basically been there and in much the same way that Wolf is for us, mm-hmm. Kind of just running with the best of what's available at the time. And I think that the Flame situation next year is going to have to mirror what the Hurricanes did. In a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I think if the Flames wanted to, as much as not ideal, because of where I think the team's going to be, they could make the roster space for three goalies.
Oh, yeah. And, like, realistically, the Flames are going to have, like, $20 million of cap space regardless.
Yeah, I'm not even worried about cap, but, I mean...
No,
I think even this season, I couldn't even tell you who the extra forward was. Like, they've, because they're farm teams in Calgary, they're not really carrying extra guys.
No, and there was no need to. Like,
so
unless you're
case,
on the road, they sometimes do.
Well, that's it. Just pull a guy up for the road trip, but I think you could carry a third goalie because of that.
Yeah.
You know, when your farm team was in Stockton or in, you know,
Quad Cities
or Omaha or, you know, any of those places, yeah, it took a long time to get a guy up here, so you carried 13 forward, 7 or 8 defensemen. I think this, if they want to next year, they could run three goalies.
Yeah.
At least to start with.
Yeah, and, you know, let everybody get some time and figure it out. Yeah. Like, and like, how did you say, realistically, next year, the Flames are not going to be competitive. And, you know, as much as, you know, the desire to be a competitive team is there, the whole Sean Monahan trade is hanging over the Flames, where if they don't have a bottom 10 pick, that pick goes to Montreal. So... it's not in our interest to be good next year. So it's one of it's a wrinkle there where, you know, like you're able to do more roster experimentation where you normally wouldn't, you know, and having a three-headed goalie tandem makes sense just because of the fact that, you know, if you have like three guys that are basically equivalent, then you can just.
Yeah. And I mean, let's just say that. Vladar, I think there's a 50% chance Vladar comes back and looks no different. There's a 50% chance that he slows down because of this. Yeah. Let's say he looks the same as he does this year. He gets hot. He looks really good. Now you got another asset to move.
Exactly. And he's a free agent at the end of next season, too. Just like Mangiapane.
Yeah, you know, somebody loses their goalie at Christmas time. They call the Flames, say, you got three of them. Please, sir, can we have a goalie? And, you know, you move one away.
Yeah. And even if you're only getting like a third or fourth round pick, hey, that's an asset, so why not?
Exactly. So we'll see what happens there, but I think, you know, as you and I talked about, we're going to see a lot of Wolf this season, maybe unexpectedly, and I think we've got to see Wolf in at least half the games from here on out.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I don't know what's worth doing.
Yeah, and like realistically, just commenting about next season, like the Flames... basically, all year have had Hanifin and Tanev and a Vezina-caliber Markstrom throughout the season, and they're still the 11th worst team in the league. So, like, this team is not going to magically improve right away next year where they're going to be vying for a playoff spot. And, like, especially if they move on from Markstrom... like, it's going to be a rough season, and, like, they're going to be where, like, Columbus is next year, more than likely, like, in the top five-ish bracket instead of, you know, vying for a playoff spot. So it's going to be a tough season next year, regardless.
Renew your season tickets, folks. You're going to want to be there.
I already did.
All right. Well, you'll be the one guy. You'll be sitting all by yourself.
Yes.
Moving on,
kids.
As we talked about next season, Flames have made some signings for next season already.
Yep.
They went out and signed a college free agent. This is something that the Flames, I think, have always done really well compared to other organizations, is finding those undrafted college guys. And you and I have attended many a rookie camp, and especially lately, where it's all college walk-on guys. So good to see them sign another one here.
Yeah, and, you know, like we've hit gold on a few occasions, like Josh Juris, Walker Dewar. David Moss, like, you know, they've gotten some actual.
I mean, even
NHL
non-college
guys.
Our captain Mark Giordano for years was a walk-on undrafted free agent.
Yeah, so, you know, anytime you can get good players for free, that's always a bonus.
The Flames brought in Sam Morton. He's a 24-year-old from California. He is 6 foot, 174 pounds, right shot forward. He's been playing for Minnesota State University all season. Signed here and has joined the Wranglers this year on a PTO, an ATO, an amateur tryout agreement, which means he's eligible to play for them for the rest of the season in the playoffs. He signed a two-year, 950 AAV contract. It was supposed to be an ELC or an entry-level contract. Turns out, we won't get into all the logistics of the CBA here. I don't think anybody wants it. The Flames got rejected as an entry-level deal. They had to re-sign this deal as a non-entry-level. And the only difference, any player younger than 25 as of September 15th during the year of their first contract must sign an entry-level deal. According to Cap Friendly, every entry-level deal is a two-way with a maximum salary of $950,000. So really, the only thing it means is you can't go higher than $950,000. You can add bonuses. You can't in the second contract. This kid's not in line for bonuses. There's no need to worry about this. He's here. He's in Calgary. He's playing for the Wranglers. They're going to refile. It's just it's a clerical error.
Yeah, they already did. And it's one of those where, yeah, like, normally when you're signing a college player, you're signing him for the season that you're playing. And that's where the wrinkle was, because if you had signed him for this year,
he'd be 24.
It would have, yeah, and it would have been the entry level deal.
But because he comes in next year, he's over the ELC age.
Yeah, which is not a big deal. It just
nothing changes. Same money, same term. Nothing's gonna change.
It was just a clerical. Oh yeah, his age is slightly over by then. Whoops, and you carry on. Like, it's no big deal.
He's already here in Calgary. He's playing for the Wranglers. He's played three games for them, wearing jersey number 45. In three games, he has one goal, one assist, and 2 points. So can't ask for much better than that for a guy jumping from, you know, college into the AHL. We'll see if he can keep that pace up.
Yeah, from what I've heard of him, basically like a Glenn Gaudin type, where kind of does everything okay, but you know, don't expect him to be like a full-time NHL guy unless he takes another step. But, you know, a serviceable top-line AHLer slash like 13th forward, definitely possible moving forward.
Yeah, I think with the depth this organization has a forward, I can think of a handful of guys who are probably on the depth chart above him. I don't see him even getting that 13th forward sniff without taking another big step forward.
Yeah, and realistically, like, I'm sure that he will probably see a game here and there, like they've done, like, with Cole Schwint and a few other guys this year. Like, next year, I'm expecting the same kind of, you know, rotate any of your viable players in for a game here and there as injuries happen. But I would not expect him to stay for more than a game or two.
Well, that's one reason, too. I think Cole Schwint and, you know, some of these other guys are higher on the depth chart than him if there is going to be a call-up.
Oh, I agree. And usually the Flames are good about getting their college free agents at least a game in the NHL. Like guys like Bryce Van Berrybrandt to Bill Arnold.
Wow, there's some names I've forgotten about.
Yeah. You know, like they've had a few guys like that where it's like, oh, yeah, that guy played for us briefly.
Wasn't Bill Arnold the college line mate of Johnny?
Yeah, exactly.
And one of them went somewhere and the other one is now...
He became a photographer. Like there you go. Old man, so.
There you go. The other deal the Flames signed this, actually today, was signed an entry-level contract for Joni Yermo. This is one of the defensemen they brought over from Vancouver in the Elias Lindholm trade. Joni Yermo is 21. He's Finnish. He's playing in the Finnish league now, the Liga, as they call it. So he's been playing top-level hockey over there, as Brad Treliving, you say, playing with men. For at least since 2021-22, so this will be his, third year in the Liga, fourth year in the Liga. And they've signed him to a two-year, $850,000 AAV two-way deal that starts next year. So this is a guy that I think you'll be seeing coming over next year as well.
Yeah, and that was the whole part of the trades for this year, was to get that middle group of young assets on the blue line, so that way there'd be some legit competition between guys like Brustevich, Poirier, Morin, Yermo, Kuznetsov, Soloviev, you know, Ohotiuk, like all of those guys being in that basically same age group, same fighting for the same spots. And Yermo will slot in, and if he can earn a spot in the NHL, good for him. And if not, hopefully one of the other guys does. And, you know, the
I'm not expecting him to get an NHL spot next year.
No, I would be surprised if, Unless, like, the Flames, he plays well and the Flames run into injuries, I wouldn't expect him to actually suit up at any point.
I think if nothing else, we're going to see, as we often do, some readjustment time needed as he comes over from Europe and learns the North American ice, North American game. I think that's, you're going to probably see him struggle a little bit with the Wranglers at the beginning of the year because of that, and I don't know that he'll be top on the depth chart because of it.
No, and realistically, like, if he gets any NHL action, it'll be the following year, and probably, like, the same type of cup of coffee that Kuznetsov and Soloviev did, where, you know, game here, game there kind of thing, unless he takes that next step and becomes a legit NHLer, in which case he will have a spot, but, yep. You know.
We'll see. Like I said, I think there's going to be some transitional difficulties.
Yeah. I would not be hopeful that he will transition to an NHL player, but he definitely will fill a spot on the farm team.
Yeah, and I think he can, you know, I don't think everybody the Flames are bringing over and all these young guys and all the picks are going to have, they're not all going to be NHLers. And, you know, even if you can have a really good career as an American League guy, there's something to be said for that too.
Yeah, and it doesn't hurt getting an opportunity, and, like, that's where the Flames become an actual desirable team for insert miscellaneous unrestricted free agents for prospects, because, hey, you have to beat out these guys on a bad team in order to, you know, earn your spot in the NHL. And, you know, we don't have a ton of depth, so if you're actually showing something there, you can get time with guys like Huberdeau and Kadri, provided that you're playing well.
Yeah, for sure. So I think we'll see more of these deals over the next little bit. I mean, we saw, as you mentioned, Brustevich is signed, Yermo signed, Morton is signed. I think we'll probably see a couple other. I think there's a couple free agents we're waiting to be signed. I think there's probably going to be one or two more college free agents, even if that's not till after, you know, camp in July. But I think that we're in that season where you're going to start seeing a steady stream of these little deals signed.
Yeah, and, you know, Calgary's in that good zone where, you know, the opportunity's there for you to take it. It's also not like the Flames have a ton of high-end draft picks that are, you know, like, higher-end competition for, like, top-line roster spots. Like, Hanzik is basically the only guy that they would be competing with, and so, you know, if they're a more flashier guy, they might want to sign with a team where, you know, like, the route to the first line is not exactly impeded by much of anything.
Yeah, and I think the Flames are starting to also get a resume for being a good development team, both AHL and NHL, and that, you know, if I'm a young player, I want to come into that as well.
Well, and you just have to look at guys like Connor Zary and Martin Pospisil as an example. Like, they were on nobody's radar at the start of the year, and, like, they've both cemented themselves as top-tier young players.
Yeah, our GM constantly makes it known that we're making opportunities for young players. Speaking of the GM, did you read the interview that he did with Frank Saravelli post on the Daily Faceoff this week? Interesting article. I don't want to read too much into it or between the lines, but a couple of takeaways, and we'll link it in the show notes. So if you're listening to this on a podcatcher on the web, we'll have a link to it in our show notes if you want to go read it. Calgary will have roughly $19 million in cap space heading into the summer, with only 68.8 committed. And, I mean, that gives them some money. And Craig Conroy said in this article, when he was talking to Frank Cervelli, quote, "If there's the right length of a contract, if there's a need we have, we'll do it. It's hard to find certain players. Maybe to add a veteran or two would be something nice. We have a good mix. We're trying to let the young guys play, and that's still priority. But if we can find help for 2 or 3 years, that's what we're looking for, because it's hard to make trades for certain players, and we still want to be competitive," end quote. So Conroy pretty much saying, you know, don't expect him to go out on, you know, day one of free agency and pay $11 million for a guy, but that, you know, there's always that mid-tier of free agents, and it sounds like Conroy's willing to bring in some help, some support for 2 or 3 years to help shore up his roster.
Yeah, sort of like how Ottawa brought in Giroux and Tarasenko over the last couple of years. And then they filled a need at the time while they were transitioning their organization, and, you know, were able to move on from Tarasenko and get a few things.
Yep.
And, you know, the Flames, realistically, are probably going to be in this situation where, you know, whether they're trading a draft pick for a young player or, you know, eating a Monahan-type contract or, you know, insert that kind of situation here, and possibly going after, you know, like the newer version of Blake Coleman or Frolik or, you know, like,
yeah,
that tier.
I think
of
you'll probably
serviceable veteran guy.
I think you'll probably find the guy in his early 30s who's maybe coming off a big deal or coming off a disappointing year and needs a place to go, and Calgary could be a good landing spot. Mm-hmm. Especially if they're, you know, if they've had a disappointing couple of years and they're looking to, you know, if Conor really wants to do a 2 or 3 year deal, you're not going to be here for 7 years or 6 years, you know. So, okay, I'll come in, I'll play well for a couple of years, I'll look really good because there's not a lot of good guys in this roster, and then I can go and get a better deal when I leave.
Do you offer Lindholm a 1 year, $5 million contract? Because honestly, I don't think he's going to get much more than that.
I think I'd let Lindholm come to me if I was the Flames.
Yeah.
You know, let his agent know, hey, we're open to bringing you back. If you don't see what you want in the market, give us a call.
Yeah. I'm it's rare to see a player torpedo themselves as much as he has this year. But
I think it goes back to discussions you and I have had, you know, early in the season, even last year. I don't think he was worth what he thought he was worth. I don't think any GM thought he was worth what he was worth.
No, and, like, realistically, you know, heading into this year, like, in my mind, like, him and Kadri were basically equivalently tiered, and Kadri signed a 7-7 deal. And so, like, if you're wanting a premium beyond that, it's kind of like, well, you don't really, like, 7.5, sure, but.
And I think Kadri came off a cup, and that's why he got a little bit more, too. If we would have signed Kadri and he didn't come off winning the cup, I don't think he would have got 7.
No, it probably would have been a $6.5 million or less.
And well, I think the fact that it didn't get signed till late in the summer, I'm thinking like 5.5, 6. Like, usually when you're signing that late, you're taking a big discount.
Yeah, and, you know, like, Lindholm played himself, I think, and it just, yeah.
I honestly think Lindholm looked good when he was with Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau, and I think, you know, he probably looked like a better centerman than he really was, and we see that all the time, right? A guy gets propped up by their line mates, and that's what happens there. I know our friend Kevin Olenek over at Shifts and Pucks thought he was the best, you know, center in the league for a while. I think he's a good second-line center who got propped up, and when he didn't have those line mates, I don't think Kevin thought he was the best in the league. I think he was the best two-way guy, I believe. I think that's what he said. But, you know, I think he was a good number two center that got propped up, and when he didn't have those line mates there, you know, we saw what he was. And now in Vancouver, when he is playing as a, you know, 2-3 center, I think there's going to be some recalibration there as far as what he is, how he plays, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and realistically, you know, like, any contending team's not going to want him for more than a second, third line center role.
And, you know, those are the kind of guys, I'm not saying it will be Lindholm, but a guy like that who, you know what, had a bad season and got traded and didn't look good and needs a place to redeem themselves, Calgary could be that place for you.
Yeah, and that's why I threw that one out, because he kind of is the poster child of, you know, I was really good and then had an epically bad year and, you know, need some redemption. So.
I think from a PR perspective, I'm not sure you'd want to bring him back.
I agree.
You know, like, I think that, you know, if it's going to look like you're just rehashing if you bring him back. You're not actually moving forward. I can see you and I talking about it. I can see, you know, other media outlets talking about him. If this guy, the Flames aren't moving forward, they're just bringing in the same old guys again. So, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I think that there will be some vets coming in. I don't expect the Flames to necessarily go out and try to use all $19 million. I think they will use some as leveraged in a trade or something. But
Like, I could see them getting dumped a contract for like a 1 year, $6 million or something. You know, here, eat our garbage so that way we can afford, you know. And there are plenty of guys around the league on competitive teams that fit that bill, sort of like how Ryan Johansson was dumped on the Flyers by the Avalanche. And I could see that kind of situation happening with us benefiting from that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And I think if you're Conroy, that's probably, if I'm looking for a veteran, that's probably the first avenue I'm exploring. Because if I can take that and get paid to do it,
Yeah, because why not? And, you have $20 million. Like, you basically are the only team that can spend the cap that has more than, like, $5 or $6 million of cap space heading into free agency. So, even with the cap going up, and, you know, you look at all the other teams, especially ones that come close to winning the cup but don't, you know, and if they have a deadbeat contract on their hands, they're going to be, you know, calling Conroy, because, like, he's basically the only guy that can actually, you know, facilitate that kind of need.
For sure. And even if it's not a deadbeat contract, but one of those where we signed a guy and didn't get as far as we need, and we were kind of hoping on the 1 year it would work out. It didn't. Now we got to dump it. We'll see. And you know, I think there's some guys out there even that are maybe older and not sure if they can go. Like, I'm thinking a guy like a Brian Little type, who he's 36. I don't know if another team's going to take a shot at him for, you know, he's making $5 million now. Maybe he needs a place to go and show, yeah, I can still do this.
Talk about a player that I even forgot that was in the league still.
He's playing in Arizona, yeah.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if he's playing, actually. Let's see. He's listed as a contract. I think he might be hurt. But let's see. DB. Yeah, no, he's not there. That's why you forgot. He hasn't played this year, so don't take that contract. Yeah. Bad example.
Yeah, he's been out since 1920. Yeah. I was going to say, I thought he was.
There you go. Yeah, no, I was looking at the list of free agents. So bad contract example. But yeah, you know, something, you know, Mike Hoffman, I could see like that, or, you know, one of these kind of older guys who's always floating around.
Yeah.
You know, somebody like that, I could see. Yeah, I mean, we won't go into all the possibilities, but I think you'll either see them sign a guy who's like 30 and kind of coming off their big deal and disappointing, or an older guy like a Hoffman, you know, 34. That's why I said Little, because he's, you know, 36, but Perron is 34, you know, or sorry, 36. Like, I think some of these guys where it's like, okay, they're older, they just want a place to play, I could see them coming to Calgary.
I agree.
But not Little.
Yeah.
And then the other thing out of this article that I think is worth talking about is Conroy really made it known, as he says, that he doesn't want the young guys to think it's okay to lose. Like, you know, even though that we're talking about them taking a step back and, you know, retooling, rebuilding, whatever word you want to use, part of the reason he talked about bringing in veterans is to show that, you know, we want to win and we're not going to tank. And I love that mentality. I know so many fans use this term tank. Tank, get the number one pick. I think this is the way you got to do it.
Yeah, it's difficult because, like, realistically, the Flames are going to be a bad hockey team no matter what they do next year. Like, you could airlift Sidney Crosby into the lineup and the Flames would still miss the playoffs. Like, they're not a good hockey club. But, you know, you also do not want to get in a situation where you become like the Buffalo Sabres, the Edmonton Oilers, the Florida Panthers, where, like, for years and years and years and years, you just suck can't find your way out of the hole.
Yeah, and that's what the tanking does. It puts you into a long-term perpetual hole.
And, that's where, you know, like, it's tough because, like, the Flames do need top-end talent. Like, they need top five picks, regardless of, you know, anything that the general manager says. Like, they need that if they're wanting to actually compete in, like, 3, 4, 5 years. And the only way to do that is to suck. But you also don't want to have the mentality of, well, we lost this one because, you know, we played like garbage. Oh, well, who cares? You know, like, that doesn't help you either. And it's navigating that where, you know, like, the game against Vancouver, as an example, like, everybody was pulling their weight. They just aren't very good, and that's why they lost. Yeah. And yet they were able to go toe-to-toe with that team. And if you can keep that kind of work ethic, even though talent-wise you're going to lose most of the time, you know, you're going to end up being able to turn this around quicker. Because, like, even when the Flames were terrible at the start of, like, 13-14 and that, like, they still had guys that were putting efforts in and, you know, were able to quickly add in guys like Monahan and Gaudreau And, you know, but like the work ethic from the depth players, like the Backlunds, were still there. And it just, you know, was able to turn it over where the Flames then became an elite team fairly quickly. But, you know, like they need to find a way to do that while, you know, getting those bottom 5-6 picks like they did to get Monahan, Tkachuk, Bennett.
Yep.
Et cetera.
And it'll definitely be a balancing act, but I think that the right idea is to, you know, to say, let's go out there and not make losing part of the culture. Let's play the best we can every night, and if the best we can is a loss, that's okay. At least we put in our best effort.
Yeah, and like the 15-16 season, like the Flames played, you know, gave it their all. It's just that everybody kind of just sucked that year. And they ended up getting Matthew Tkachuk from it, even though, you know, like the effort levels were still there. It just wasn't the right mix and, you know, things fell off and that happens. And, you know, much like this season with the team where like they're giving good efforts or just not getting correct performances from one sector of the team, you know, it'll just be an interesting evolution, but, you know, they do need to, you know, keep the momentum of, you know, giving it that effort and be like the young guns from the 90s were, you know, hardworking, even though not very good. It's just walking that fine line of being too good to shoot yourself in the foot as well.
We've got a game to go watch, so let's try to get out of here as soon as we can. The Calgary Flames and the Buffalo Sabres are just about to hit the ice. And I think, Matt, that brings us to our weekly predictions.
Yes.
Last week, I predicted we'd win them both. You thought we would win against Washington, lose against Vancouver. We lost them both.
Yeah. Anytime lately, I've either been too optimistic or too pessimistic. This team does the opposite.
How dare you?
Yes.
So this week, we've got four games we can predict tonight since it hasn't started yet. So the Flames play four games this week. Tonight, they're in Calgary against the Buffalo Sabres. Then they go on a short road trip. Tuesday night, they'll be in Chicago, a 6:30 start time against the Chicago Blackhawks. Then Thursday, a 6 p.m. start time against the St. Louis Blues. And then Saturday for Hockey Night in Canada, they're back in Calgary taking on the LA Kings, an 8 p.m. start time. Matt, what are you thinking?
I think they win tonight and lose the other three.
Really? Okay. Why is that?
We play well against Buffalo for whatever reason, and we do not play well against the other three teams, so there you go. realistically, based on how they've been playing lately, I would not be shocked if they lost all four, to be honest.
Like, Chicago's not a good team. You should be able to beat them, but Chicago's kind of the Achilles heel right now because they...
Yeah, well, we've lost, like, 5 games in a row or 6 games in a row to them. So, you know, like, yeah, we should have beat them. We also should have beat them all the other times that we've lost and got our butts handed to us by them. So, you know, and then, like, they have Bedard back, so, like, we actually get to see him against the Flames for the first time as well. Yeah, it'll just be a... I think that, even though, like, realistically we should win that game, I'm not confident.
I'm going to split the week. I'm going to say that they win on the ends. They're going to win Buffalo and L.A. They're going to lose Chicago and St. Louis. I think you're right, Chicago. They just, I don't know, they...
There's just some... It's like Columbus.
And it's not even a good game to watch. They're miserable hockey games.
Oh, yeah. It's like, how can we fail more than the other team? Instead of playing better than the other.
And they've lost a lot to St. Louis lately, too.
Yeah. No, and St. Louis is fighting for their playoff lives.
And that's why I think they're going to lose St. Louis, because I think St. Louis has a lot more to gain in that one.
Yeah. And Buffalo, they're just like us, where they're just bad.
Every year I have to remind myself Buffalo still has a team, because you never hear anything about them.
No, exactly. Like, they're still in the wilderness, and... Yeah, like, as much as, like, they have a good young group of defensemen, and, like, they're going to be scary with how good their defense is, they need to add a forward or six to that team, because, they don't really have any scoring options on that team.
Especially now that Mittelstadt's gone.
Yeah. I do like that trade for both sides, though.
Yeah, I think it's a good trade. We'll probably forget about it in a couple of years. Probably by next year, we'll forget about it. But yeah, I think the Flames, I think LA is a team that's on a downslide, and they really don't have goaltending. And I think that the Flames, after two miserable losses, which I'm expecting not just a loss, I'm expecting miserable losses, like we've seen lately, you know, like 6-2, 5-2, I think they're going to come back and be looking for some blood in the dome.
Yeah.
So
could very well be.
So it's expected Dustin Wolf starts tonight. He was in the starter's net for warm-up before the Buffalo game. Where do you play your goalies this week?
I would probably play Wolf against Chicago and L.A.
Okay. So he well. So Buffalo, Chicago, and L.A.?
Yeah.
And you give marks from the St. Louis game?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you give Wolf both weekend games, so the Buffalo and the LA, I think you give them one on the road trip. And just because I think the Chicago game is going to be more miserable than the St. Louis game, I could see giving marks from that one to try and keep them afloat.
Yeah.
But I think
possible.
I think either way you're going to see Wolf, I'd say in three. I'd play him in three of the four.
I agree.
I think it would be a good challenge for Wolf too to take on a playoff team that, or a team that's fighting for the playoffs, and see how he does there instead of just lousy teams.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Matt, we'll see. We'll see what happens there, and we'll see how the Flames do. And let's hope that this is not the miserable week I think it's going to be.
Well,
like even the wins, I don't think they're going to be big wins. I think these are going to be grind out, earned wins.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy for this team one way or the other. But, you know, it's a learning curve, and, you know, like, the young defensemen, like, in some ways, they're making better plays now and getting a little bit more cohesive.
Yeah, and they're not all young. I mean, like, Hanley's in his 30s.
Yeah, well, I was thinking more like Miramanov and Pahal than Hanley, but, you know, like, they're adapting to the Flames system a little bit better. We'll just have to wait and see. And, you know, like the Flames are going to need all hands on deck for the rest of this season to, you know, play defense, frankly. And, like, you can see that, like, everybody is kind of having breakdowns all over the place. And, like, the defense has been, you know, even, like, the forward group, which is largely untouched, is having difficulties coordinating their actions with the defensemen as well. And like some of the players are losing their positioning, like on the first goal in the Vancouver game, because of just miscommunications between the forwards and the D-men.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see. Just lots of little things to look forward to, as the Flames learn how to move into the next phase of things.
Yep. And that's what we're going for at this point.
Yep. And as always, go Flames go.
Fireside Chat is hosted by Dan Stevenson, co-hosted by Matt DeBorg. This episode produced and edited by Peter Marino. Fireside Chat is licensed under Creative Commons license. For full license details, visit firesidechat.ca.